Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona. Friday, March 25, a day that finds markets in the U.S. and many markets around the world closed in observance of Good Friday. But despite the market closing, there were two reports issued today. So let's start with those reports. The one from the Commerce Department, telling us that economic growth slowed in the fourth quarter, but not as sharply as previously estimated, and again, fairly strong consumer spending offsetting the drag from efforts by businesses to reduce an inventory overhang. So gross domestic product increased at a 1.4% annual rate instead of the previously reported 1% pace, according to this morning's estimate from the Commerce Department. Again, it's relatively strong consumer spending that is helping the economy's underlying strength and should further put to rest fears of a recession, which triggered a massive stock market sell-off earlier this year. That, together with a tightening labor market and rising inflation, likely will keep the Federal Reserve on a path to gradually raise interest rates this year. But consumer spending, which accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, rose at a 2.4% and not the 2% rate reported last month. More consumption of services than previously estimated accounted for the revision. But on the other hand, fourth quarter inventory investment was revised lower, but inventories remain high relative to domestic demand. So Wall Street will have to wait till Monday to react to those numbers. Now, the other report issued this morning came from the Department of Agriculture, and it was the quarterly pig crop report. United States inventory of all hogs and pigs as of March 1st this year was 67,600,000 head. That's up slightly from March 1 a year ago, but it's down 1% from December 1st of last year. Breeding inventory at 5,980,000 head, down slightly from last year and down slightly from the previous quarter. And market hog inventory at 61,700,000 head, up slightly from last year, but down 1% from the last quarter. The December 2015 through February 2016 pig crop at 29,600,000 head was down slightly from last year. And sows farrowing during this period totaled 2,870,000 head. That's down 1% from 2015. So that's the report for the March pig crop report, always issued the last Friday of the month, whether it's Good Friday or not. But again, traders in the livestock live hog futures pit at the Mercantile Exchange will have to wait till Monday before they can trade the numbers in today's report. There were some interesting numbers on the health of the housing industry in the United States this week. We started the week with the report from the National Association of Realtors on Monday telling us existing home sales dropped 7.1% to an annual rate of 5,080,000 units, and that's the lowest level since November. Actually, sales in the housing industry and existing home sales have been volatile and give way to big swings up and down in recent months following the introduction in October of new mortgage regulations, which are intended to help home buyers understand their loan options and shop around for loans best suited to their situation. That actually slowing down some of the sales. Sales across the country were down, including a 17.1% drop in the Northeast. Well, that was Monday. Then on Wednesday, the report from the Commerce Department telling us that single-family home sales, that's new homes, rebounded modestly in February as a surge of buying in the West offset sharp declines in other regions. The Commerce Department said Wednesday that home sales, new homes, rose 2% to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 512,000 units, and January sales pace revised up to 502,000 units from the previously reported 494,000. According to Joel Naroff, chief economist in Holland, Pennsylvania, at Naroff Economic Advisors, the housing market is improving, though it's happening in fits and starts and not uniformly across the nation. New single-family home sales were driven by a 38% jump in the West last month. And as I said at the outset, I'm coming to you from Scottsdale, Arizona this week, and we're certainly seeing bidding wars for homes when more than one buyer is involved in trying to buy the house. So 38.5% jump in the West last month, and other areas, sales in the Northeast down 24%, down 18% in the Midwest, and sales fell 4% in the South. So a two-direction housing market report this week. Some of the other reports, new orders for long-lasting manufactured goods fell in February. That sector continued to struggle with the lingering effects of a strong dollar and lower oil prices. And while other data Thursday showed an increase in the number of Americans filing for unemployment benefits last week, there were revisions made by the Labor Department going back 2 years, revising some of the previous numbers and actually showing that during that time, the labor market was in better shape than we thought it was. Some of the other activities that we've been looking at this week, well, there was the up-and-down guessing game on who was going to buy Starwood Hotels and Resorts. They are the owner of the Sheraton and Westin Hotel brands. They had agreed to be purchased by Marriott International, and then a couple of days later said no, they weren't going to do that. They agreed to a higher $13.6 billion buyout offer from Marriott International, spurning a proposal from China's Anbang Insurance Group. After the initial offer by Marriott, China's Anbang Insurance Group came in with a bigger offer, and Starwood said, we'll take it. But then Marriott raised its offer, Marriott raising the cash portion of its offer to $21 a share from $2. And as a result, Starwood said, yeah, we do like Marriott better. And so I guess Marriott International will be the owner of the Sheraton and Westin hotel brands, according to this report. Valeant Pharmaceuticals has been going through a real struggle. And they, that Canadian company, maker of drugs, said its chief executive officer will step down. Activist investor William Ackman was appointed to its board and also reported it had uncovered some accounting problems in the company's financial statements. So that may be settling down somewhat. To begin the week, the stock jumped nearly 16% in trading in New York. And then we may end up with only one paint company in the United States. The Sherwin-Williams Company has agreed to acquire its rival paint company, Valspar Corporation, in an all-cash deal valued at about $9.33 million. Sherwin-Williams paying $113 a share. That's a premium of 41%. One other note, too, in the corporate world, this one coming from Louis Dreyfus, announced this week it is seeking partners for some of its businesses to help the commodity trading group to weather a market downturn that hit full-year profit. Louis Dreyfus' net income dropped 67% from 2014, and net sales fell to $55.7 billion from $64.7 billion. So they're probably experiencing what some farmers are experiencing with their bankers this year and the low commodity prices. I think Max will be discussing that with his market guest, Paul Georgie of Allendale. That's coming up shortly when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Paul Georgie, Allendale Incorporated, joining us in the studio. We always appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, sir, especially as we have big reports looming. And there's one coming up in the week ahead that'll be one of the biggest of the year, that prospective plantings report.
Exactly. I think we hope that creates some excitement in the grain markets. It should. Historically, it does. The factor that the trade's going to be looking at, I think, is the corn planted acreage. Allendale survey said we're going to have 90.4 million acres planted, USDA at 90 million acres on their February outlook meeting. So that's going to be a key number. We hear a lot of shifting and talk in the trade right now. We've had some nice rally in soybeans. We had 60 cents rally in soybeans since the 1st of March. And that's when they usually take the survey, that first 2 weeks of March. So we may not get much shifting because of profitability changes and so forth. So we're looking for a big number in corn, soybeans to be a little bit higher than the USDA number at 82.5 million acres.
Is acreage more in play around the fringes of the Corn Belt, if you would? I mean, I'm thinking of northern areas up into the Dakotas. I'm thinking of the eastern Corn Belt where planting it was either greatly delayed or didn't happen last year. I'm thinking of the southern part of the United States where they're looking at cotton versus soybeans or corn. In the heart of the Corn Belt, a lot of growers have told me, yeah, we're just going to kind of hold it. We do 50-50 mix and we don't change much.
Exactly. And I think that's the bottom line. When you think about right now in March, early April, we're going to talk about the fringe areas. We're going to talk about the Delta. Are they getting planted? How much shifting is going on there in North Dakota? Can they get in early? And they can shift a lot of acres from corn to wheat or corn to soybeans up there. But the bottom line, when this October, November comes around, it's what kind of yield and what kind of acreage we've planted in the Midwest and in the Corn Belt.
Are bankers having some input in some areas on this too?
Well, the bankers, I think, are having an impact. I mean, we're hearing stories that are sad stories where you've got the farmer goes in for a renew his loan for this year, and the banker just says flat out, no, go somewhere else and try to find some money. So that, I think, is having an impact. I think the farmer, though, will try to plant corn if he can financially because he knows he can get more yield off of that. Therefore, he can possibly get a greater return. Where if he goes in and plants soybeans, then he knows he's going to have a loss at this point in time unless bean prices rally sharply during the year. So he's going to go in with the attitude, can I get the corn planted? And if I can, I got a chance for a better return than I do on soybeans.
We're going to be looking at some usage numbers here before long, too, and as the USDA analyzes just how much of this grain is being used out there. One thing that occurs to me is that it appears ethanol demand is staying very strong. Ethanol usage, in fact, is exceeding expectations, is it not?
It is. Ethanol production is very strong. We expect that we're going to see that the USDA is going to have to change on their balance sheet one of these times, is maybe even as much as 50 million bushel increase usage for ethanol because of the strong ethanol production that we've seen here throughout most of the marketing year. Now, the question is, how much will change on this quarterly stocks report? The usage should go up because of the ethanol production. It should go up because of livestock production, and that we've had more cattle and hogs. We've on feed, so therefore we could see more of that in the second quarter. So we're expecting that possibly we could see an improvement in usage, or I should say in the stocks number, which would mean that we used more of it, less stocks. However, I don't think it matters much to the bottom line when we get to the end of the year. 30 to 50 million bushel switch, it doesn't do much for us as far as the bottom line goes. We're still going to have plenty of corn and still a large carryout.
Do you think that this report, whatever it brings our way, will quickly be put in the rearview mirror and then we'll be looking at crop planting season weather?
Well, I think let's just say this way. We hope that this report gives us some excitement, some energy to move this market out of the trading range that we're in, that we get a rally out of this thing so we can the farmers can sell grain at a better price and improve their revenue. But it looks like we're only going to have a short period of time where we'll get a reaction. Historically, within 2 weeks of this report, we're back at the level we were before the report. So hopefully we get some volatility because of that. Weather is going to be a factor, but right now, weather, I mean, people are trying to draw excitement out of weather, and we're just not getting it. I think the thing that grain traders are looking at now is more of the financial situation. As I call it, currency wars that we've got, the central banks of these various countries, the EU, China, South America, the U.S., the Fed, what are they going to do with interest rates and currency? Because that's having a huge impact on our demand and our export ability of our grain. And if we raise interest rates and make a stronger dollar here in the U.S., that just slows down our export demand. And that could have as much of an impact on price as weather here for the next several weeks and months.
The signal from the Fed, though, has been that they're probably going to pretty much hold the line on rates. Isn't that the case?
Well, that's what the signal was last week. This week, there's more Fed presidents talking, and they're leaning toward a possible. There's another one or two leaning toward possible increase in interest rate hikes here in the U.S. So it's a battle. And as one of the Fed presidents has said in a comment, he says, we do have some very live meetings when the Fed meets. So there is discussion. Will they hold the line? Personally, I think they need to hold the line because the rest of the world is decreasing interest rates. And we don't want to be out in left field here with the idea of increasing rates.
And really, when you look at our domestic economy, the signals have not been very strong, have they, in terms of, for example, the housing industry and other indicators that are watched?
No, I think, higher interest rates really doesn't do agriculture any good either, because if we raise interest rates, that means the banks need more money. The cost of production goes up. Possibly land values go down, so it can impact agriculture dramatically. So a stable interest rate right now this year is good for the farmer.
Put in perspective what that strength of the dollar does in terms of our grain exports. Can you relate that in some way? When the dollar does rise, to what degree does it hurt our exports?
Well, I don't know if you can put a dollar and cents to it on a day-to-day basis, but bottom line is, when the U.S. dollar goes up, the foreign currencies go down. Therefore, it makes the grain coming out of Russia, for instance, coming out of South America, where we've got tremendous competition right now for soybeans. When the dollar rallies, the real in Brazil and the peso in Argentina go down. Therefore, it increases the value of their grains domestically down there, and their farmers sell because of higher prices. So, and the world buyer can buy their grain cheaper there because of the lower valued currency. So that is what stalls out our demand. And we see that on a weekly basis. Corn and soybeans, for instance, where weekly demand reports show less and less sales coming out of the U.S. We're running way behind on corn sales for the year. So that actually may have an adjustment from what we're seeing increasing in ethanol demand. Our export demand could offset that and hold the supply steady, too. So
we need something to bring a little life into the market, you're saying.
We do need something to bring some life, and I think the life is coming from looking at other areas, like the currency markets, like the strength in the stock market. Some of these outside markets may actually have the biggest impact on prices and traders' attitude. We've also have got the situation with regulations, the CFTC, and the regulations that we continue to have to deal with is also causing some flatness in price because investors are pulling out saying, I don't want to deal with this regulation anymore. I'm going to be on the sideline.
Paul, thank you for joining us. We always appreciate your visits.
Thank you very much, Max.
Paul Giorgi, Allendale Incorporated.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
If you're involved in agriculture or agribusiness of any kind, I thought maybe on this Easter weekend we would give a little thought to the important role that you play in the world. J.B. Penn, who has been involved in agriculture from corporate to government all of his career, he is now chief economist with John Deere. J.B. was the keynote speaker at the Salute to Agriculture banquet at National Agriculture Day a couple of weeks ago. I asked J.B. Penn to talk about his feelings about American agriculture.
Well, it's quite a success story. I mean, our industry has lots of things to be proud of. I mean, we have essentially enabled a large country to be fed and to be fed less expensively over time so that today the average consumer spends less than 10% of the disposable income for food. And that contrasts with 50%, 60% in many other countries of the world. And we're doing it more sustainably now. We're doing it with lots of advanced technology that enhances the environment and is good for wildlife. And so it's just a great success story.
And you listed some interesting facts going back a century on what has happened to agriculture production because of technology and equipment.
Yes, that's true. We've had some big waves of technology. We've had mechanization, we've had hybridization, the introduction of hybrid varieties, we've had the introduction of fertilizers and pesticides, we've had genetic modifications in plants, and now we're seeing a new wave of technology that's resulted in precision farming and the use of computers and sensors and satellites and all of those things to enable us to more precisely use the inputs that farmers use.
And production and yields per acre have climbed dramatically.
Yeah, just very much so. You know, I used an example where a long time ago, it took many, many labor hours and lots of land to produce a given amount of corn. And today, it takes very little labor and a much smaller amount of land, and we get the same amount of corn. So it's been a great success story.
Do you think we can keep up with the growth in population?
Well, that's one of the things that I talked about tonight. That depends on us continuing this stream of new technology, continuing this productivity growth. And that's going to require science-based regulation, spending on research and development. It's going to mean we have to keep the technology pipeline full. And more, there's a big lag. Once you decide to create a new product, it takes a dozen years and lots of money. And so, you know, we have to be making decisions and investments today that won't pay off for a dozen years into the future.
J.B. Penn with some positive thoughts about American agriculture. J.B. is chief economist with Deer & Company. Well, ahead of this three-day trading weekend, a lot of nervous traders because the world picture can change so rapidly and affect markets equally quickly. And so they'll be watching carefully for any outside events that could affect the market on Monday. But let's take a look at where we're going to start trading on Monday in the commodity world, because yesterday at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, live cattle futures finally snapped a five-day losing streak and ended the day higher. And so that means Monday, this is where we'll start. April live cattle will be at $135.97 a hundredweight after gaining 52 cents on Thursday. And the April feeder cattle contract will start the week at $155.95 after gaining 40 cents a hundredweight on Thursday. And the impact of the quarterly pig crop report may not show up very much in livestock trade and the hog trade. April lean hogs will start Monday at $69.82 after gaining 15 cents in the Friday Thursday trade. In the grain market, we did see soybean prices move higher on the last trading day of the week. That happened mainly because of the export of soybean meal. Pretty good numbers there, and that sent soy higher. Corn and wheat were little changed, as you heard with the earlier visit Max had with Paul Georgie, because not too much happening at the moment. So where do we start on Monday at the Chicago Board of Trade? Well, May wheat will start at $4.63 a bushel after gaining a quarter of a cent on Thursday. The May corn contract starts the week at $3.70 a bushel after gaining one and a quarter on Thursday. New crop December corn was a penny higher on Thursday. Then the May soybean numbers, the May contract will start Monday at $9.105 a bushel after gaining 5 cents on Thursday, and the November soybean contract, new crop, gained 5.5 cents for the day. So hopefully there'll be no major terrorist attacks or anything else over the weekend, and those are the numbers that we will be starting with on Monday of next week. The GMO vote in the Senate several days ago is of concern to companies in the food industry. So even as General Mills and other companies say they'll keep fighting mandatory labeling of genetically modified food ingredients, they've started rolling out these disclosures across the United States to comply with a new Vermont law. Feeling now is that Congress will likely not be able to derail Vermont's law requiring labels on foods made with genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, before it takes effect on the 1st of July. And here's why food marketers are concerned. That Vermont law sets fines of $1,000 per day per product if a food product being sold in Vermont is not in compliance, not labeled. And General Mills said, we cannot label our products for only one state without significantly driving up costs for our consumers, and we simply will not do that. Earlier this month, you recall the Senate blocked a bill that would nullify the state laws requiring GMO labels and leave such disclosures to the discretion of manufacturers. So that's the word. We're probably going to see labels now with a GMO label. That's our time. A blessed Easter to you all. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.